shifts on the parsha for Bihar. Bihar, he's at a wedding. The parsha goes through Shemitah, and whenever you have the word Aretz, right, which is what you have many times for Shemitah, the land is work, the land is laid fallow, so the land, rest assured that there's a Hasidic interpretation that the land doesn't just mean the physical land, but it means landness. You'll see what I mean. The pasuk tells us in Chaf Hei Vav, I'm trying to see if I could actually quote the whole pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vayisah Shabbat Haaretz Lachem La'achla Lacha La'avdecha La'amatecha V'lischircha U'lisoshavcha Hagarim Imach." Says the art scroll that all of the land should lay fallow. Actually, I'm not reading from the art scroll, so I should if I'm going to say I'm going to. The Sabbath produce of the land shall be yours to eat. Shabbat Haaretz. That which is from the Sabbath should be yours to eat, to you, to your servants, your maidservants, to the one you hire, the one you live with, that lives with you. So the Hasidic commentaries look at this passage and say, "Vayisah Shabbat Haaretz Lachem La'achla." Says Rav Yaakov Alexander, also known as the Beis Yaakov. There are a few different Beis Yaakovs, but this one is not the one who is related to the Mashiach. It's a different one. So Hashvisa, the resting, right? We say Shabbat Haaretz, the Sabbath of the land. So whose land? So says the Rebbe May Alexander, Hashvisa May Artzius. It's not referring to the literal land, although it is referring to literal land in a literal sense, but on a homiletical way or in a Hasidic way, it's referring to the landness, your groundedness, if you will, your gashmius, if you will, should be resting. You should rest from the gashmius. What does that mean? Shabbat Haaretz. In order to go up in your spirituality, you have to take a break from your physicality. And that itself, just taking a break and saying, I'm going to lessen how much food I eat, or lessen how much I'm subjugated to the physical world, so that will be lachem. As we see in other contexts, the word lachem means for you. Like you say, lech lecha, Avram, right? Avram says that you're going to go, and it's going to be for you. So to the extent that we can dissociate ourselves or lessen our dependency upon the physical aspects of life, to that same extent we will be able to raise ourselves in spiritual aspects of life. Easier said than done. And it doesn't mean to completely dissociate, but it means to be, I think, it means to be non-subjugated to. Right? When it comes to Shemitah, you don't work the land, you don't invest in the land, but you still own the land, and you can still benefit from the land. You can't benefit in some ways. So, meaning you're not getting rid of, if we're going to sort of take this analogy to the extreme, you're not getting rid of physicality, you're just not investing in physicality. So too, Shabbat Haaretz Lachem, if you're willing to, you know, have the physicality that you need, but also to not invest too much into it, so then you will be Lachem, that will be Lachem, it will benefit you in the long run, if you have such a mentality, such an approach. That's number one. In the midst of the parsha talking about what happens after the 7 years, so then it also tells us about not just the land, but about loans. And the second aliyah goes through some of that. Lo sunu ishes amito, v'yaretim me'alokach ki ani Hashem alkechem. The pasuk says, each of you shall not aggrieve your fellow, and you shall fear Hashem. Unclear what it's referring to. It's talking about presumably something with business. You have to look back at the psukim beforehand. If you sold something to someone or you loaned something to somebody, so you do not you don't pressure them to give back, to pay what they need. That might be a different pasuk. Let me see here. In the art scroll, the Rashi says, on Yud Zayin, what's the simple understanding of the pasuk? You should not abuse another person verbally. Verbal abuse. Shelo yaknit ish es chaver v'lo yasiyanu etza she'en hogenes lo. You shouldn't give advice that would not be good for them. If yidar kol v'hanaso shel yoetz. V'im tomer miyodea miskav delanti l'ra. Who knows if I'm really, have bad intentions or not. I'm giving advice. So that's why it says, v'yana nesham l'keichem. The passage of lo sonu ish es amito. You should not abuse your fellow man. Says Rav Simcha Banim Yipshitzcha. You should not verbally abuse another person. That's the pshat. You shouldn't verbally abuse, and that is aser. It's actually forbidden. It's prohibition to do so. Ulam, however, hachaseid ha'amiti, the real chasid, noheg b'inyan zelis nimishur sadin. They will go beyond the letter of the law. How could you go beyond the letter of the law? I have a sneaking suspicion that I've talked about this before. You'll have to check the tapes. But what does it mean, going beyond the letter of the law? To not abuse your friend. What's beyond the letter of the law? To help your friend, that's more proactive. But in terms of not doing something, how could you do more of not doing something? So it says, you're right, Jason, that you should help them. That wouldn't be going above the letter of the law for this one. This is going above the law for the negative part. So it says, lo rak acherim lo yoneh. Is a beautiful idea. It's not just other people that you can't abuse. Elagamis atzmo. But even yourself, you shouldn't abuse. Ein humala es erech atzmo b'yeinav. You should not abuse your own self-image. What does that mean, abuse your own self-image? At least the corner of Simcha Banim. Ein humala es erech atzmo b'yeinav. Elanoe kol yom b'anava u'vitznius. You should not see yourself as differently or abuse your... abuse your own self-esteem, maybe, to look at yourself as greater than you are. I'm going to take this to Simcha Banim and say the opposite. That lo sonu ish es amito with nimishur es hadin means to not abuse yourself in a negative sense. A lot of us are harsh on ourselves, right? We're too hard on ourselves. Our standards to ourselves are greater than their standards to other people. For instance, things happen where I feel bad about something, or I don't know what to do about something, and I'll tell somebody else about it, and they'll say to me, Rabbi, what if one of your congregants had the same issue? What would you tell them? And oftentimes, that reframes how you think about that issue. It reframes it as, well, if it was somebody else, I would tell them to do this. Well, then why are you holding yourself to a different standard? Why are you saying that you have to be, break your head over it, feel bad about it, if you would say that to somebody else, or say it to yourself? This is one of the rules, I believe, of Jordan Peterson, a little controversial for some people. But his book, 12 Rules of Life, I think touches on this concept. You shouldn't treat yourself any worse than you treat somebody else. And that's a very important concept, especially in the world we live in and the social media, frenzy that we're in, where we start judging ourselves vis-a-vis somebody else, whereas somebody else, we wouldn't tell somebody else that about ourselves. We would say it about ourselves in our own mind. Famous story about the Chavetz Chaim, you might know. He's on the train, and... somebody else is on the, he's on the train going to be a scholar in residence somewhere, right? The same story. And somebody sitting next to him says, oh, I'm going to see the Chafetz Chaim. I'm so excited. They didn't know they were sitting next to the guy. And the Chafetz Chaim says, oh, yeah, you're going to see the Chafetz Chaim. Yeah, I've heard good things, but I don't think he's such a big deal. This is Chafetz Chaim talking. And this guy sitting next to the Chafetz Chaim slaps the Chafetz Chaim in the face. You see, you don't say that about the Chafetz Chaim. You can't degrade the Chafetz Chaim like that. And then they walk off the train, and everyone's looking at the place where the Chavetz Chaim is supposed to be speaking, and everybody's looking around, where's the Chavetz Chaim? And obviously the Chavetz Chaim is coming off the train, and this man realizes, oh my gosh, I just slapped the Chavetz Chaim. And he feels so terrible about it, and he goes over the Chavetz Chaim, and he says to him, I'm so sorry, if I would have known that you were the Chavetz Chaim, I would never have done such a thing, I would have never talked to you like that. And the Chavetz Chaim says, no, don't apologize, you taught me a very valuable lesson, which is that you shouldn't even say Lashon Hara about yourself. That's a very important idea. You shouldn't speak poorly about yourself. We heard a few weeks ago from Rav Terrigan, you shouldn't speak poorly about your spouse, but even about yourself. Right? Some people are self-deprecating for one reason or another. It might be a defense mechanism. It could be a victim mentality. Whatever it might be, a person can speak poorly about themselves in order to make themselves feel better, make somebody else feel better. You should never do such a thing. You should always see yourself as worthy of your own respect. And I believe that's what we could perhaps say is the lifnim mishur sadin, not just to not verbally abuse somebody else, but not to verbally abuse yourself. That's not what the Rav Simcha Banim is saying. right? It's within the same vein of using that concept of being l'snim mishur sadin. Moving on, another similar pasuk we have later on in the parsha. Bless you, Chaf Hey Lamed Hey, 25:35. Not a very long parsha, from what I can tell. What is it? It's only 57. Okay, there you go. Very short, relatively. How does that rank? Do you know? It's got to be the low 10.
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably like maybe like 10 to 12. Something
yeah.
Like that.
Okay. Well, you have all the Devarim ones, which are super short. Those are probably the top five, or bottom five, whatever. So says the pasuk, V'chi amuch achicha u'matza yado imach v'chazakta bo ger v'soshav v'chai imach. The article translates, if your brother becomes impoverished and his means falter in your proximity, you shall strengthen him, proselyte or resident, regardless of who he is, so that he can live with you. Meaning, give him some help, give him some support, so that he can similarly live like you. V'chai achicha imach. V'chai imach. There's a different second like this. V'chai imach. Next pasuk says, V'chai achicha imach. Says the, and this, by the way, at least these psukim are the source of where you're supposed to give your money for tzedakah. You're supposed to prioritize those who are with you. Those who are with you, you should prioritize with you. Other drushes that I learned from this pasuk, I think also. I think might be the source of Rabbi Akiva and that Gemara about the desert. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Trying to see if Rashi quotes it here. No, he doesn't. Okay, so I'm not going to say it, but it could be. Okay, so either way, says Rev Yisrael Migor, the Beis Yisrael, the Ger Rebbe, a couple generations after this, Hasemis, I think, V'chai imach ayidei shetechaya es chavercha, through giving money and supporting your friend, it's not that then he will rise to your level of standard of living, it's not that he will be with you on the same level of living, but rather, by helping him to zake afas halachayim. V'chai imach means you will live with him. When you give to him, you will feel enlivened. You will feel like your life is worth living. Sometimes we feel like, oh, we're helping somebody else by giving to them. It's not true. When we give to somebody else, we're helping ourselves. It's reciprocal. It goes back both ways. That's the drusha that me and my friends would used to use. I think I've said this before. That anytime someone would ask one of my friends for a Dvar Torah, I never pulled this trick. They said for a Dvar Torah, so we would always use the same, they would always use the same phrase. Oh, the pasuk says, v'nasnu. You know the word v'nasnu is a very generic word. The odds are, appears in a few parshas. But no one's ever going to doubt that the word v'nasnu is in a parsha. So they would say from the Gra, I believe it's on parshas Tetzav, if I'm not mistaken, maybe Truma. And it says, v'nasnu is a palindrome. Vav nun taf. Nun vav, right? You can read it backwards and forwards. The Gra says because when you give to other people, you also get back in the same amount. So this was my friend's Dvar Torah. He would always say, whenever someone, hey, do you have Dvar Torah? Oh, v'natznu. It says v'natznu in the parsha. No one's going to ask you if that's really true or not, and then they'll say that idea. That was their trick. Yeah, no one ever cares. V'natznu. Oh yeah, I'm sure the word v'natznu is in the parsha. So the end of Parshas Bahar tells us ve'evan maskis. There's a very interesting sort of last two psukim in the parsha, why they're there is for a whole nother time, but I talked about it a little bit on Tuesday, in my parsha class on Tuesday. But the pasuk says that when you are, I believe this is the end of it, let me see, yeah, when you are a slave, at least according to Rashi, when you are a slave in a non-Jew's home, Evan Mas, it says, Lo tasu lachem elim pesam ha-seva lo sakimu lachem, says Rashi, maybe you're thinking, oh, I know you're Jewish, but look, I'm living in a non-Jew's home for right now. Maybe I can, when in Rome, he's got an idol, I'll have an idol, we'll do things together. I'm working for them, so maybe I have that allowance. And says Hashem, no. It doesn't matter who your owner is, it doesn't matter who's, employing you, you're not allowed to have any kind of idols. And then it says, Ve'even maskis lo sitinu bi'artechem ishtachav osolah. And a stone, I've had it translated here, a flooring stone, tile, right? A flooring stone upon which to prostrate oneself, you should not make, right? You should never have such a thing because, and this is, I would think one of the things that they used to do in order to make like a proper bowing, whatever. they would cover the floor with stones. So you shouldn't make a stone floor so that you can bow on it, that kind of thing. So says the Me'ash Shiloach, Rav Mordechai Yosef Liner, what does it mean you shouldn't make a stone floor in order to bow on it? Hainu sheha'adam lo yimsor nafsho al kol davar. Not everything is worth giving up your life. Interesting phrase. Halachically, I'm not sure how to square it with other things, but kemo inyan nesila sapayim, just like when it comes to tachanun, or at least real nesila sapayim, throwing yourself on the ground. We have that a few times from Moshe. The Moshe of Aaron, custom kama padim, b'tar ba'i, you blow up in a hand, right? The meraglim, maybe korach, I don't remember exactly the other instances. What are the other instances? It says it's called a few times. There's meraglim, there's korach. I'm not sure if it happens at Matan Torah or not, at the Egos of, I don't remember. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that if I throw myself on the floor, I give myself over to Hashem, and I basically say, Hashem, we need forgiveness right now. So then Hashem's going to answer. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that. The Gemara, however, in Megillah says, if you're not the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu, you cannot assume that you'll be of the same, you'll have the same power, and you should therefore not ever throw yourself down on the floor like that. Aval esel kol adam b'ha'azar shelo yasekein. If you're any other person, you shouldn't do so. The Jewish people's lives are very precious to Hashem. And through prostrating yourself or throwing yourself down on the floor like that, at least in a figurative sense, you are giving up your life to Hashem. Hashem doesn't want that. Hashem wants people to want life. And therefore he says, that's what it means here. You shouldn't put down a stone floor and throw yourself on it, as if to give over your life. The purpose of life is to live, as we know. The Pasuk tells us, you should live with the mitzvot, but not die by them. And I think this concept is relevant not just to literal death, which I don't think he's talking about here, but also in terms of things that require an inordinate amount of sacrifice and thereby compromise other important things of our lives. Things that are worth living for, things that give us life. You shouldn't sacrifice those things if it means, you know, the quality of your life, you know, and everyone can apply this in their own way. But basically, I would say things like, waking up super early in order to daven at the crack of dawn. It's a wonderful thing if you can do it. If what that means, therefore, is you'll be tired the rest of the day, and maybe your davening is not going to be as good. You won't be able to focus with your relationships with other people. You'll be in a cranky mood when you get to work. So then that is not the hill that Hashem wants you to die on. Daven later. Yes, it's better. Halachically, it's better to daven at the crack of dawn. That's a real halacha. That's the best time to daven. Hanes hakama. But that doesn't mean you should do it if it's going to ruin your life. What? What is that? Whatever it is. Yeah, not alo tashafar. Yeah. Hanes hakama is what I meant. Right? Crack of dawn colloquially. But the point is that there are some halachas which are important to keep, if you can keep them, and they're not necessary, right? Obviously, if it's necessary, you have to do what you have to do. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking moser nefesh for something which would not necessarily pan out for you in the long run. So, for instance, we did a tshuva on last night in my halacha from Gemara Shir about whether or not a doctor can come back from the hospital after going to save somebody's life on Shabbos. A very interesting question with a lot of angles to it. The big machlokas of Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. But in the end of there, we quoted from Rav Asher Weiss, a story from the Brisker Rav. There was once a doctor, I believe it was even a woman doctor even back then, and she went to save somebody's life, and she took some kind of automobile, some kind of vehicle, in order to save a life. That's obviously okay, because you're on your way to save somebody. You can violate Shabbos for that. And she walked back home. And this, the Brisker Rav got wind of this. I don't remember how exactly he heard about it. And he says to the woman, you are chayiv to drive home next time. You're chayiv to drive home next time. Chayiv to drive home next time. Why? Because you have no idea subconsciously what kind of damage you did to your mentality, your approach. The next time somebody calls you and says somebody's dying in the hospital, you might not think you've been biased, but you are going to be biased next time. And you're going to think, well, last time I had to walk 2 miles home. And my feet hurt a lot afterwards. Subconsciously, even if consciously you know what the right decision is, you never know what kind of repercussions those sacrifices, and that is a noble sacrifice. You tried not to violate Shabbos, says Rabbi Brisker Rav, you shouldn't do that, because you'll be compromising other values in the future if you take such sacrifice. So while it's true, we should make sacrifices, we should make sure that they're healthy sacrifices that we can accommodate in our own life. You shouldn't create stone floors for yourself where you're going to fall down on them and hurt yourself and hurt your life. So there's an interesting connection between that and the slave who lives in the non-Jew's home. Unclear exactly how that fits in. I'm sure we can make some kind of drasha. But nonetheless, an important one to understand, to treat yourself well, like we said before, make sure you're taking care of yourself and not abusing yourself verbally also, as we said. Okay, I wish you have a good night and good Shabbos. Thank you, David, for making the challenge.